Welcome to the IGIS Institute Sounds of Safety podcast, where our community will be delving into a series of critical issues supporting the public sector mission space. Today, the IGIS Sounds of Safety podcast welcomes back Larry Zorio and Jeremy Cooper-Levitt for another episode in the Navigating Cybersecurity series. Listen as they explore the fifth core function of the NIST cybersecurity framework, Respond. The Respond function is critical for maintaining the continuity and integrity of an organization's operations, assets, data, and reputation when they are a victim of a cyber attack. Now let's pass it back to Larry and Jeremy for the episode.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of IGIS Institute's Sound of Safety Security Corner. This is Larry Zorio, and I am here with Jeremy. The last couple we've been doing together, it's been great. We've been having a good flow, and we are here talking about the NIST Cybersecurity Framework 2.0 and why all of you should be following it. It's a great roadmap, a great North Star for you, great plan for you to take if you're having trouble getting a cybersecurity program off the ground at your agency, at your company. And we've been going through all the different facets of it and really trying to do it in bite-sized chunks for each of you. And just to recap, it is a group of six different domains within the NIST cybersecurity framework, and it kind of walks you through all the steps you need to take. We have now covered govern. We've covered identify. We have covered protect. We've covered detect. Today, we are going to cover respond. And then finally, we will have another one around recover, and that will kind of take care of all of the six different functions or domains that are under NIST. All right, so let's just get right into it, Jeremy. I love the fact that we covered detect last time, we're covering respond this time, and I love the fact that they're kind of right next to each other, because you could say maybe they're like brother-sister functions. They really kind of flow well into one another, and we did talk a bit about respond on the last episode. So just as a reminder, you know, I mentioned all of those other functions that we covered. If you haven't heard them, please go back and listen to them, because it's really important that you kind of start at the beginning, because it talks about kind of building a foundation and identifying your assets and identifying risks and your priorities and your agency or your company. So it really is important that you start from the beginning. So please, please, please do not start on today's episode with respond. Go back and listen to the other ones. As always, I'm going to tease it now. Stay tuned for the end of the episode, because at the end, we get very tactical and we give you real specifics on tools and processes that you could put in place regarding this particular category, which is respond. All right, Jeremy. So to get into it, we have respond, and let me just give you the description that NIST has for respond, and then that will kind of get the conversation going. Respond, actions regarding a detected cybersecurity incident are taken. So actions are taken against an event, an incident you've seen, is kind of what this is about. What are your overall thoughts with this one, Jeremy, just to get the juices flowing here with this convo?
Well, in the world of cybersecurity, isn't this where the rubber hits the road? It's something's happened. You hired those security people and you hired them for a reason. They're sitting there watching and looking, but when something bad happens, you need them to do something, and they need to be ready and they need to have a plan. They need to know, you know, as we talked before, like an adverse event has occurred. What are we going to do about it? Yep. And it's kind of like I said, it's why we're here as cybersecurity professionals.
Yes, this is, you know, this and detect are kind of the two that we always see in cybersecurity movies and we always see on TV shows, right? This is, I don't want to say it's the fun stuff, because it's all fun, depending on what you like, but this is the one that seems to grab the most headlines, is this one. You've had an incident, and now how are you going to respond to it? This is when you start seeing it in the newspapers, right? Typically, you're going to hear about an event once kind of a response team is put together, and it's kind of some sort of news outlet has received information on the particular incident. And this is when things really, really start happening. All right. So the great thing and the beautiful thing about NIST is they have these functions, which is respond, which I gave a definition or NIST definition under that. But then they have kind of subcategories under that. So Jeremy, let's just kind of walk through some of these. And the beauty of NIST is under those subcategories or even smaller categories, which break it down even further. I do not want us to cover all of these subcategories today, Jeremy. I mean, anybody who's listening can go and just do a search on NIST Cybersecurity Framework 2.0 and they can get all these. But the first one under response is incident management. Definition: responses to detected cybersecurity incidents are managed. So we have some different ones under there, you know, categorizing and prioritizing a response plan, how you triage and validate. So I just throwing a lot at you there. What are kind of the important highlights that you want to make around this particular incident management category?
Yeah, that's like you said, like the whole word is it's managed. It's You're bringing the right people to play to the room to say that an event has occurred. We need to take action now because it could be on the news. You need to get information out to your stakeholders. You need to get information out to the business. You need to make decisions quickly. You might have to escalate or shut off certain networks because things have occurred. You might have to pause business for the moment. And you can't do that in a vacuum. You need to get together as a team and have a plan of action. And it's better to have the plan of action before it even occurs. And so that's what this management about part is. It's what are your standard operating procedures when an incident occurs? You can't come up with a plan for every kind of incident. There's incidents out there that haven't been invented yet or haven't occurred yet. There's plans for a lot of companies, maybe if they live in an area where there's hurricanes or bad weather, they have plans for getting people home or getting people to safety. And it's the same thing with computer networks and with cybersecurity. They need to have some kind of plan to follow and to manage the plan and to bring the right people together. And you need to know who they're going to bring in and what they're going to talk about.
Yeah. This hits home to the point that I made at the beginning around how please don't start with this one. You got to go back, listen to the other episodes. So you might be thinking in the audience like, oh, geez, all right, Jeremy's telling me I need a plan. Like, I don't know how do I create a plan? A really good one to start with is govern. So govern, the first part of NIST, is going to start talking about how to get help with developing policies and procedures and plans. And this being one of those plans, you need to have a plan on how you're going to respond to some of this. That is kind of the first section of it. And NIST kind of goes through it, I mentioned some of these, right? Like how you're going to escalate, how you're going to categorize some of these. So the next one, Jeremy, is incident analysis. And let me give you the description on that one. Investigations are conducted to ensure effective response and support forensics and recovery activities. And under that, actions are taken. You have the data and even the metadata collected. You understand the magnitude of the incident. So which one of those do you want to touch on in regards to one, you know, more important than another or what have you?
It's the most important thing is what you do in the first 10 minutes. I don't think anyone cares too much if you kind of overreact. But if you underreact and you didn't look at all the facts, and you didn't let people know and are not transparent enough, we think something's going on. We're going to declare an incident, and here's what we know so far. And the important part is that you're communicating and that you have people who are trained following the plan that you had already created. You have the list of the numbers that you need to call to get all the people on a bridge and get them together. But it's how you react in the first 10 minutes to really determine what should we do. Where did this happen? How can we keep it from spreading if it's a malware outbreak? Or if there's something that's trying to encrypt all your data, like how do you respond to it? And you have to do it quickly. I think having the right people on the call is very important, or their backups, so that you can make those decisions So you're not all sitting there waiting on phoning someone to say, hey, we need to shut down this data center at this location because we have a malware outbreak. But I think it's like that triage at the beginning. Mm. What happened?
Yeah. And I'm even thinking, we haven't even touched on this. Practice makes perfect, right? You got to be doing tabletop exercises. Don't overcomplicate it, audience. Please don't. Something as simple as Jeremy mentioned, like the call tree and getting people on the phone, like just practice that once a quarter. It doesn't have to be like this big elaborate exercise. Like just pick a day and say, all right, everybody, we just had an incident, and make sure everybody knows how to get on that phone number that you have. Make sure that you have all the correct phone numbers. So that's really important, is a kind of planning and doing this analysis. But really, I love your point around that first 10 minutes. You have to know how to analyze what's going on in those first 10 minutes. The only way you're going to be able to do that is practice. It is the only way. You know, the other thing too is towards the end of it, I mentioned that an incident's magnitude is estimated and validated. The only way you're going to do that is with that plan. And by doing these exercises, you have to get comfortable to be able to assess what just happened and understand the magnitude of it. We've talked before around how you need to be setting up, and Jeremy talks about it a lot, just how important data is and understanding the data that you have. So you need to understand, like, an incident just happened. We've done the analysis, and this particular incident is impacting XYZ server. If you have the correct foundation where you've documented your assets and you've documented and you've categorized them and you've prioritized them, then you can look at the data on that server and understand the magnitude of this particular incident and what has occurred. So I think that's really, really important. The other one that I wanted to touch on here is the incident data and metadata are collected. And I think this might even dovetail or go back to our previous episode, which is around Detect, Jeremy, because there we talked a lot around the types of tools you need to be using and the types of logs that you need to be collecting. So maybe for the folks who haven't listened to our Detect episode, which all of you should, but for those who haven't, like, that incident data and metadata are collected. Like, just elaborate a little bit more on that and the importance of having the right data.
I've been involved in a lot of these types of incidents, and fortunately or unfortunately, malware, it's here with us and it's a part of life. And I need to know what happened right at the source of it. And I need the metadata, the data about the data. Where did it begin? Where's kind of the trace line of the event that occurred? Where did it start? How did it get through my network? How did it get to the endpoint, and how did the data get exfiltrated, and how did the action happen? I need to know all that and trace what happened, because I could still have something opened on a firewall. I could have a port that shouldn't be open. I could have a file out there that's still running that, even if I image the computer and bring it back up, it could still be there. It could still be running a service that maybe it was running as an admin a level. But I have to know kind of the event horizon of when it occurred and when it started and kind of the timeline, so that I can better fix it and then make sure I've stopped it and I've eradicated it and it stopped happening. Mm-hmm. Because that's part of the triage, is I got to stop the fire. I got to put the fire out quickly. It's burning here. And every time I put it out, it starts back up. And that's an indicator that whatever it is you did didn't catch it all. There's still some little back doors that are left that the hacker is getting into. Mm-hmm. And it could be from your firewall that wasn't locked down correctly. And you need to go look through your logs and see where the traffic's originating from.
Yeah. You need the facts, right? It's the detective work that we talked about. You can't do the analysis you need to do unless you have all the facts. And really, facts in a technology world is data. It's the logs. So you have these firewall logs, and you need to be reviewing them and ensuring that, you know, all the ports that Jeremy mentioned are either closed, or the ones that you need open are opened, and you need to be reviewing those to ensure that they are in fact closed, and just getting all the logs you need from those. It's just really important. All right, let's move on. And you've already touched on this, Jeremy, which is great. So we're going to cover it even more here. The next section of Respond is incident response reporting and communication. Response activities are coordinated with internal and external stakeholders as required by laws, regulations, and policies. So you mentioned the call tree. You know, that's a perfect example of stakeholders, right? So what do you want to talk about with this one, Jeremy?
Yeah, and one of the first numbers that you should be calling is your legal department. Because you are, as we mentioned in other podcasts, we have assets, we have data. We could be holding the data, sensitive data and information of people that we were entrusted to protect their data. There are rules and laws, and they vary by state. They could vary by the contracts you have with your customers. But you need help to understand what are my requirements for notification. I noticed an incident has occurred, and I've noticed that you know, the worst thing could have happened and data has been lost. And different states have different timelines for required for notification. And so you got to get that out. Some are 4 hours, some are 72 hours, some are 24. You need to know that there's a long, there it could, it varies. And if you have data on everybody in the whole country, or, you know, you've got to figure out, how am I going to communicate that out? What kind of letter do I need to send out? How do I communicate to the media? How do I get that out there to the people I need to get it to? And that's a part of your plan. That's a part of your tree. And that's why one of the first phone numbers you should be calling is your legal department. And that's why it would have been a good idea to have practiced beforehand. Because if you know the data you have and that you're holding, you can from there extrapolate what are the rules and laws I got to abide by for protecting that data. And one of those is notification. In almost all contracts now, there is a section on notification for data loss.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, whether it's a contract, you know, if you're a company and you have actual customers, or if you're a municipality, it could be that you might have some sort of SOP or policy in your town or city that says that you need to notify the mayor's office when one of these things happened, right? So it's really good to understand your contracts, your policies, your state laws, your town laws around that. So I was writing down, I'm so glad that you brought up the legal example. They really, really can be your friend and a really valuable asset to you. When you do have an incident, they can steer you in the right direction. They can kind of help ensure that you don't make a mistake as well. But I was writing down even some other ones that are some other departments or different groups that are important for you to have maybe in this plan that you've written. You definitely want legal involved. I think it's good if you have a communications department to involve your comms team as well. Certainly, it depends. Like if you're a security department, you want to involve IT. If you're an IT department, you want to involve the security team. I mean, that's a given. Your executive staff as well. So whoever your boss is, you know, if it's the chief, there are some cases where the CEO of a company is going to need to be made aware. Other cases where the board of a company is going to be made aware. And these are, you know, some other external parties as well. They're going to need to be made aware. Another good one for you to have is your local FBI office, to have their number handy and notify them. Now, you know, every phishing attack that you get, you're not going to notify the FBI. But when you have a sophisticated attack, and you'll be able to tell when this one is a bit more sophisticated than others, definitely involve the FBI as well. Some other things that, you know, over the years, Jeremy, that I, and I'm curious to you if you have the same learning as me, that is really important, and you don't think it's important, I mean, maybe you don't want to spend the time at first, is having like communication templates. So I mentioned, like, you know, when we have an incident, I might have to notify the CEO or the board or the mayor's office It'd be really good if you have an actual template, like an email template or just a Word document of this is what I'm going to state. And you can work with your comms team or your legal team on developing these. But having those handy in an incident is going to make the world a difference. It's just probably a half an hour of time that you don't have to waste trying to figure out exactly what format I need to put this in if I'm going to be talking to, oh boy, the press or the board or your chief of police, right? Like your command staff. You're going to be communicating with them differently than you are your own team. So having those handy. Jeremy, like, have you kind of seen the same thing, same learnings over the years of these are important?
Yes, I have. And, you know, save them. Save letters that you've sent out. There are good example templates that are out there that I've seen companies put that out there. Talk to your peers. Like, they can give you a scrubbed down version of a letter that they can use. But there's always good letters out there that you can use to get communications out there. And you can, you know, a communication template for a data loss, a communication template for a service outage. There's good different things, and the proper wording is very important as well. That's why a communications and legal person should be reviewing that. It's very rare that you would have a cybersecurity person or an IT person just write an email out and send it out to all the customers. It does need to go through the right people so that you're telling the correct story and you're being as transparent as possible, but also following the boundaries of the law, and you're not also, you know, breaking privacy laws either.
Yeah. Audience, if you don't have these, you have no idea how happy you will be that you have these when an incident does occur. It's just one less thing you have to worry about. All right. So moving on to the last section under respond, we have incident mitigation. Activities are performed to prevent expansion of an event and mitigate its effects. And under that, we have the incident is contained and the incident is eradicated. Jeremy, what do you want to speak to around those two?
I want to talk about the contained one because it's always the, oh, I can breathe again, that you kind of, you know, and you can kind of prove, all right, we have contained the incident. It's no longer spreading. It's not going anywhere else. We've looked at the logs on our other systems and we don't see any of the same activity. We're able to now kind of see the scope of the blast mark, if you will, of where it occurred and what was impacted. So we've contained it now. We've stopped the spread and we can now move on to the next phase of stopping it. And, you know, we'll talk about it another time of recovering from it. Mm. But at least you've contained it and you've stopped the spread and the work that you're doing has become affected. That's always when I start to like breathe in and breathe out again a little bit. Now that we've contained it, we've cornered it, we can start to get rid of it. But that's containment's the one I always like. I want to stop the bleeding or stop the fire from burning. And I've put it in an area now that I can focus my resources on. And we can now stop our time chasing and now look at fixing.
Yeah, I love that. It's just taking a deep breath. It's a great feeling when you're going through an incident where you can finally say that things are contained. And then, you know, the eradicated side of it is just ensuring that not only is it contained and it's not going to go any further, but now you've gotten it out of your network or your environment, right? And there are ways to do that, you know, whether it's erasing it. I mean, in some cases, you do have to erase certain systems to truly clean them. But there are other methods to eradicate as well. And I think even that comes out of this part is it's almost like the after action plans, like the lessons learned from the incident. That is so important as well. Everybody is, when you've gone through this, you never let a good crisis go to waste, right? You've gone through this incident. You've gone through this dramatic thing that you had to go through. And yes, it's terrible, but there are absolutely learnings to learn from it, right? So I think it's make sure that those are documented as well so you can make sure it's eradicated and it doesn't happen again. All right, Jeremy, we're moving at a good pace for this one. So we did tease at the beginning for the audience that we would bring up some tools, some process, actual like tactical things that people can do with regards to respond. So what is some of the help that you would recommend people, whether it's a technology or what have you, that people could do or take action with respond?
Well, you kind of alluded to it, and it is my go-to is the tabletop exercise. You should be doing those at least once or twice a year, depending on the field that you're in. And you should be able to kind of come up with different scenarios. A lot of people will use a third party to come in and create a scenario that nobody knows about and get everybody on the incident response team to jump on the call. You can schedule them. You can also do them as unscheduled, which is a good idea of like you brought up earlier, like practicing the call tree and seeing how quickly people can get together. The good thing about these though is that you get to see people and how they work solving a problem and interaction. Because even when they go through the tabletop exercise and you're going through a scenario, your brain, your imagination actually believes that it's occurring at some level. It's not the true panic setting in, but you are practicing and you're getting ready for the big game. And you will, by practicing it, be ready for when it does happen, to be able to stay calm in the pocket, if you will.
Yeah.
But I love tabletop exercises. I'm seeing a lot of contracts and I'm seeing a lot of requirements now coming out that companies have to have incident response practices and that they've got to be practiced and kept up to date.
Yeah.
And I've seen external auditors come in and ask for that too, as a part of when they're poking around and looking at someone's cybersecurity function and program. Mm-hmm. It's becoming a standard that you should do and practice.
Yep. And you want to know the beautiful thing about that one, everybody, tabletop exercises? It doesn't cost any money. Yeah, it costs some people's time because you have to go through it and it's really important that you go through it, but you don't have to go find budget for it. You can do it on your own. There are plenty of resources out there for you to create your own. Jeremy mentioned, and there are some great services where third parties will come in and do it for you. But it's huge. We talked about it on a previous episode, just how important like security awareness training is. That's another one that doesn't cost you any money. Here's another one that doesn't cost you any money, but it's great training. It's creating that muscle memory when these things happen. If you had listened to our Detect episode, I said there would be some overlap with some technologies with regards to this one. And the one I want to bring up is called Managed Detection and Response. So it does both the detection of an incident and it responds to the incident. And some of these are different. There are actually technologies where it's like kind of fully automated and, you know, maybe even uses some AI involved with kind of taking action and detecting an anomaly and then responding to it and actually cleaning it up. There are other ones that are more of a service where there are kind of human beings working for you, like actual threat analysts. And they will take action. So that is definitely one that I would look into. And there are some, you know, some bigger players in the space that do this. And I'm not going to pick any favorites, but, you know, some of the big popular ones, Microsoft has one and CrowdStrike and SentinelOne. And I think there's even Mandiant has one. I think Google is even getting into this space now. But that is literally probably 5 out of 400 of these MDR services and tools. So just give it a search and look for those and you could start there. All right, good. So we gave tabletop exercises. We talked about even just creating comms plans. So that's another free thing that people can do. Create a call tree, create some comms plans, create some communication templates. You will be so happy that you have these templates when an incident happens. I'm telling you, everybody, believe me. And then we have the MDR services. We have another thing called an MSSP, Managed Security Provider, and they can do these for you as well. So there's a lot of assets out there, and maybe we should even do, we'll probably do another episode on just more technologies and what have you, Jeremy. But hopefully this gives everybody a good idea of what you need to be doing for respond. Use this tool, use the NIST framework, have it guide you through this process. look at some of these steps, and it will guide you, everybody. Jeremy, any closing comments before we end?
No, I like what we covered. We covered quite a bit today. The ideas and the examples of things that you can do without spending money. And also, if you have budget for it, things that you can do to help. And all goes back down to knowing where your assets are and prioritizing what's the most important data to you, because that will determine how you detect and respond things.
And we're going to sound like a broken record with that. And Jeremy, thank you for bringing it up. Bring it up every single time we get on this podcast, because it is the most important. All right, everybody. So that ends our episode on NIST Cybersecurity Framework 2.0, specifically focused on respond. We are going to be covering recover on our next episode. So please look for that next one to drop, and we'll bring more to you, and hopefully you find this valuable. So thanks, everybody. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for tuning into today's episode of the Sounds of Safety podcast. Be sure to stay connected with the IGIS Institute on LinkedIn and X, and don't forget to subscribe on Apple Music, Spotify, or your preferred podcast platform to catch future episodes. From cybersecurity to artificial intelligence and deep dives into critical national data sharing initiatives, the Sounds of Safety podcast has you covered. Until next time.